Welcome to the Science Witch Podcast, where we explore how science and witchcraft intersect, interact, and affirm one another. I'm your co-host, Angel.
And I'm your co-host, Ruby. And this is our 66th episode of the podcast, and we had a nice little conversation with Master Gardener for totally 100% the first time, Carol, about bees. I was there for, in all reality, we had two attempts at this. I was there for the first time, but I was absent for the second, so I did manage to get some context for what's going on, but otherwise I know about as much as the audience does in terms of what was said the second time around.
Yeah, well, this episode was one we had to re-record over the course of some really tumultuous life events that happened to both me and Carol between the time of our first recording and the second one that we ended up publishing here. We don't want to mention anything about it, but suffice to say that our intention to have this out in spring fell to the wayside because of how much life has just been coming at both of us right now. But one of the things that has been keeping us going and giving us hope in these uncertain times has been our garden community through the Master Gardener chapter that brought us together. Joining Master Gardeners has been one of the most formative and rewarding organizations so far in my life up to this point, and I've met so many wonderful people who've taught me so much about plants, and that includes Carol. And it's through Master Gardeners that I've learned some really important skills for how to best to grow plants in my area and help ensure that this knowledge is accessible to anyone out there who wants to grow plants for any reason.
Yeah, that included about the certification for the Master Gardener program and just how amazing of a resource it is just for all over the world. I did get a chance to look up the Master Gardener chapter where I lived there after the interview. There is one here in Missoula. We talked about pretty much everything in the interview to my mom, and she's been gardening for a few years now, but this is the first opportunity she's had to be able to have plants like rooted in the actual like ground. So now we can make space for bees if we want to now.
Yeah, and let the bees. we all gotta save the bees. And that's one of the reasons I love being a Master Gardener so much. This organization is such an incredible resource for networking. And in many ways, it's been something that I've been looking for my entire life. One of the things I really enjoy is I have some intergenerational friendships of people who have been living and working and gardening for someone, like some of them for 80 years. And it's incredible to learn about how to garden from somebody who's had so much life experience and wants to teach it. And that's one of the things that I have found through Master Gardener. And I strongly urge anyone who's interested in plants to check out your local chapter. Even if you can't commit to being a trainee, there's still lots of amazing educational opportunities and programs to help teach people about growing plants, including online. OSU has several very informative extension service videos available for free via their 10-minute university. And they teach on all sorts of topics from growing the best tomatoes to building raised beds to pruning fruit trees, and I'll make sure to put a link to that in the show notes for anybody who's interested.
And honestly, I really wish I had time to like learn how to garden more. I also wish I had the space for it. My mom does it and she's getting better every year, but that being said, I wouldn't replace the time I've been getting recently to do songwriting for freaking anything.
Yay.
At the moment, but I guess my real problem is I can only really be at one place at a time, but otherwise I would do fucking everything. That said, this is a great place to go to for exactly that variety. So without further ado, let's get on to hear this interview with Carol about mason bees.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Science Witch Podcast. Today, we have a guest that is also a dear friend of mine. And I wanted to go ahead and start out by introducing Carol to our listeners. So, yeah, Carol, why don't you go ahead and start out by introducing yourself?
Hi, everybody. My name is Carol Haven. I'm a dedicated advocate for nature and sustainable living. I found my passion for horticulture and environmental stewardship through my journey as a Marion County Master Gardener. I graduated in 2022. I was inspired by my love of pollinators. I did found my own business that is called Pollinator Haven Farm, and that is also dedicated to promoting sustainable gardening practices as well as protecting the pollinator populations and habitats. Despite my life changes, my commitment to volunteerism remains unwavering. I average around 500 hours each year to Marion County Master Gardeners. And with that, I do education on pollinators as well as mason bees. And with that, I definitely try and get my dedication to sustainable coexistence with nature through all of this. And for me, gardening is more than just a mere hobby, it's my way of life. I nurture the earth, I cultivate food, and I foster ecosystems that support both plants and wildlife. I continually seek knowledge and I aim to grow and evolve just like the gardens I tend to. I am a Marion County Master Gardener, a passionate volunteer, a protector of pollinators, a mason bee enthusiast, and an advocate for sustainable gardening practices. I'm committed to cultivating a greener, more vibrant world. And thank you for having me on your podcast today.
It's so good to
Yeah.
have you. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah. And also, Carol is my master gardener mentor, because we were working cl so closely together with all of these other master gardener projects that I was like, well, let's just like have you be my mentor. And I wanted to talk just really quick about master gardener for those who are unfamiliar with what master gardener is. Perhaps you could just like briefly explain what we mean by I am a master gardener.
So, master gardeners are volunteers and they are across the nation, and there actually is an international master gardeners association as well. So, what we are is we are citizen scientists. So, we come from all sorts of walks of life. Like I myself, I actually do not have a college degree. I have a vocational degree where I worked for a long time, and now I'm a master gardener. There are people who are doctors that are master gardeners. There are people who have master's degrees, such as you, Angel. And then there's people who are just, they have degrees, but there's a degree in accounting, but they love to garden. So we're across the board, just people who love gardening, who love pollinators, and we come together. So in Oregon specifically, it's ran through Oregon State University. And the Extension Services is ran through Oregon State University. Different states have a different university they go through. But the point of Master Gardeners is we're citizen scientists that go through a university of research-based gardening skills. And then we, from the learnings that we do, we then go out to the public and spread the word and spread education to the public on the research-based education and gardening skills that we've learned ourselves.
Yeah, and Master Gardener isn't just for the people who are volunteers. There's all sorts of free events, and also whenever there is this weekend coming up, we're going to be at the Marion County Fair, and we're going to be teaching people about plants. And one of the things I really love about it is it's like the gardening is for everybody. You know, no matter what your ability, no matter what your age, no matter what your economic backgrounds, or you know, wherever you're coming from, if you want to grow plants, Master Gardener will help you learn how to grow plants. And it's not just like plants you can eat, it's so many different things.
Yes, there's
There's,
a flower class. I think this weekend is also the Iris Dig,
yep.
and as well as the Marion County Fair. So, and like what you're saying, Angel, we are at different events where we have tables. So, if you yourself just have a question to ask, contact your local extension office in the help desk and call in your question. You can send pictures, you can even bring in samples of a plant. Like if you have bugs on your plant, bring in your plant with the bugs on it. We'll come and help identify the bug even.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of fun actually to try and figure out what kind of samples and things are coming into the help desk. And we also are at the Oregon State Fair. We'll have a big table there. I think we're actually almost taking over the whole floral building with what Susan is doing with the Oregon State Fair education-wise. with Extension Services by itself. So Master Gardeners is part of Extension Services. So let's say you're not so interested in gardening, but you're interested in preserving food. There's also Master Food Preservers. There's Master Composters. There's Master Naturalists. So those are the people who like to go out to the wild forests and everything and look at all the natives and natural habitats that have been here from before. And it's amazing the amount of education you can get. And with public, it's all free education. There's very rare events that we do where we charge, but most of them, it's all free. Come and learn about whatever you want to learn.
And
And
just
oh, go
to
ahead.
piggyback a little bit on gardening is for everyone. Somewhat recently, I heard a reframing of the idea of citizen science that I want to share, and to really lean into the idea of like resident scientists or resident science, just recognizing that not everyone is a citizen who might want to be involved. And sometimes that language, which I've often used before. But someone shared with me that that language can be a little bit limiting. So I don't know if resident science is the right way to go, but maybe thinking around that as one way of opening that circle even wider. But I love the idea of, of course, those of us who aren't in a lab, right, aren't doing science professionally, still engaging with the scientific community. I think that's super important. And unfortunately, I don't have master gardeners near me, but there is iNaturalists and all sorts of other sort of, I don't know, resident scientists projects that people really anywhere can jump into. Yeah, and the chapter that it depends on the chapter you are closest to. Like some chapters do a lot more than others. I would recommend checking out like by county if you're in the United States, and there's chapters all over the world too. So there might even be a chapter if you happen to be international. But there's an emphasis on making gardening accessible, and I went to a workshop on things like how to make your garden beds as accessible as possible for people. Like, what are the best plants for people
Nice.
to grow in order to ensure success? Building this connection between people and plants is one of these things that heals humanity. Because when we're disconnected from nature, when we're disconnected from where our food comes from, I feel like there's a lot of consequences to that disconnection that can be harmful. And when we can heal that connection, no matter how seemingly small, even if it's just like, I am growing a rosemary plant in my window, and that's
Yeah.
all I can do, that is still having both a scientific connection to the plant, because all of the information that Master Gardener provides is research-based, but also spiritual. Because just like I talked about this before, like with mycology, it's one of those sciences that the more you study it, the more wibbly wobbly timey wimey the line between what spiritualism and what science becomes. And I feel like that it happens like that with just gardening. It's like the
It's
more
like
you
the lines blur a little bit, yeah, and that
right.
also goes into the earthing and being one with the earth again. It's not just the food you eat, just but there's studies about going outside and just being in nature for 30 minutes a day will help you be calmer and your stresses gets reduced. And if you're able to, I think it was 1 week out of the year to go like camping. You actually go camping, you wake up with the sun, you go to bed with the sun, and it helps reset your like internal clock again. So especially for those who are like working nights or something like that, if you because your time gets all crazy when you do something like that. If you're able to reset and just go out and go camping in the middle of somewhere, in the middle of a forest is best rather than a paid campsite where you have people all around you, it will help reset your whole, is it circadian rhythm? I think that's the words I'm looking for. And it does, it helps reset your life quite a bit and gets you back to what's important. And what's important is nature. and not just doing the grind, going in and commuting into work.
One of the things I really like about Master Gardener is people are encouraged to have sort of their expertise. And you are our official Mason Bee expert in Master Gardener. So I thought we could talk a little bit about what are Mason Bees and how you became our chapter expert.
Well, Mason bees are a native bee species, and a lot of people will actually get them confused with flies because they are black like flies. And if you're not paying close enough attention and you just see a little black thing flying around, you're going to think it's a fly. However, the Mason bees that look like are an early pollinator. So you'll see them around March to April and possibly May. We usually bring them in around June. So at this time, we are a little bit after their life cycle, but they are still very important. And even right now, they're very important to be taken care of. If you're in Oregon, like we are, and specifically Marion County, we just had a huge heat wave. If your bees weren't taken in or at least removed from the heat, there's a possibility that they are melted, that they did not develop into an adult bee. That happened to me with the 117 degree weather when we had that 5 years ago. So hopefully you did bring your bees in at least so they're in some shade. And to get back to your question though, I got interested in these Mason bees really by going to a farmer's market. And I think it was either the Albany Home Market or Mother Earth News Fair Market. And there was just a vendor there that was selling Mason bee houses. And if you bought a house, you got 10 free cocoons. And at the time, I had no idea what that meant, but I was like, something free, that's awesome. And I went ahead and bought them and I got the cocoons. So those cocoons are live bees that you put out with your bee houses. And the larger cocoons are females and the smaller cocoons are males. And you put out the mixture of them. And then they will emerge and they'll start pollinating and laying eggs in the house. The females will lay eggs in the house when they're ready for them after they visit all their flowers and everything. So my first year, I was looking at my house and I was very happy because I saw this little face in the house and I was so excited because it's working. I have bees. Wonderful. Did not realize that that face was a spider, and that spider actually killed all of my bees.
Oh no.
I cried. I was not happy with it. I actually gave up. I decided this is not for me. I had 10 and I killed all 10. None of the tubes were filled. I had no other eggs in there. So I just put it in the barn. I gave up. And then I ended up moving. And while I was moving, went to the barn to start moving out all of my stuff. And lo and behold, my house is filled. The tubes are completely filled with the mud. And that's one of the reasons why these bees got their name is they go out and collect mud. And in between the egg cells, they pack mud. So it goes mud, pollen, eggs, mud, pollen, egg, mud, pollen, egg, until they plug up the hole with the mud at the end. So seeing this house just completely covered made me really happy. And then I realized I had no idea what to do with them. So I started watching all sorts of YouTube videos, and I attended Master Gardener class well before I became one myself. And I believe Carol Horning taught that class because I do remember her. She's now retired off of the Master Gardeners, but she taught me a lot of what I know about Mason bees specifically. And then I got a lot of books. And then I started teaching the class too, because if there's one thing I also know is if you really want to learn something, start teaching it, because you'll start learning all the other nuances that you didn't even think to look up, because someone's going to have that question. So that's how I got started, was basically failing and then researching. And then when I myself joined Master Gardeners in 2022, they did not have a Mason bee class anymore. And I was really disappointed and I inquired why. And it was really because Carol Horning had retired and left and there was no one to replace her. So I just
They had to
stepped
get a new
right up.
Carol for the bees.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. So now I teach the Mason Bee Care class in spring and the cocoon harvesting in the fall. I also did the Marion Soil Water District Zoom class the first Friday in March. I did that. And then I'm doing a cocoon harvesting one in November. That one is already online. The March one is already online, and the November one will be online once that's recorded. And I will be live on Zoom harvesting cocoons in front of everybody. So I'm excited.
Awesome. And we touched on this a little bit earlier, but I wonder if we can zoom in to bees and pollinators or mason bees. Do you find any sort of spiritual connection or sort of spiritual practice in your work with the carpenter bees?
Yes. And FYI, carpenter bees is a different one than the mason bees, which is
Oh my
different
gosh,
than
I
the bees, which is different than the sun.
constantly think of mason bees and carpenter bees as the same thing. So I'm very glad that you're distinguishing those.
Well, and so carpenter bees, you'll find those in wood. That's why they're carpenter bees. The mason bees you'll find in tube-like structures with straw and other things like that. So, but no, that's wonderful because really everybody talks about bees and they always think of honeybees, which is only one type of bee, which is not native to the Americas, but it is native to other parts of the world. And here in Oregon, there are, they thought was only 400 types of bees, but the Oregon Bee Atlas has already discovered and documented over 600 types. So just so everyone knows, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of types of bees. And spirituality, yes, I do. Myself, I am not able to have children, or if I do, it will take a lot of changes in my lifestyle and my medication and everything. So I definitely feel that these bees are my babies. And I'm hoping to get chickens again. They'll be my babies too. But with everything, it's just taking care of it. And with these mason bees, it's not like I have to do a lot, but there's something about having the house filled and knowing that the plants that I planted helped them, and how I can help them next year is to plant more or to have more houses, and to know that I'm doing something good for myself, for my food, and for nature. It is all encompassed in one, where it makes you know that you're part of something bigger than just yourself, or just your life, or your drama that's happening. When you see this ecosystem that you've created or helped create, it's empowering to have that too.
Nice. Yeah, I definitely am blessed and privileged to have a bit of a garden. And while I don't know nearly as much about the different pollinators, just seeing them buzzing around, and it's just, yeah, it definitely touches something very, very deep in my spirit.
And pollinators are one of those aspects of the environment where we are at right now is humans have to kind of not so much step in, but at least help to mitigate some of the damage that environmental degradation, climate change, and habitat destruction have wrought on our pollinators, because there's a bee apocalypse happening, especially with the Barrow moth and the overdependence on honeybees versus native pollinators. And then, of course, all the other things like we were talking about with the heat wave, right? The bees, in some ways, need our help to not be extinguished from the biosphere. I whenever we're talking about how humans are part of nature, I'm always reminded of Braiding Sweetgrass by Dr. Robin Wilmer Kimmel, who talks about, she is Anishinaabe First Nation, and she had asked her class of mostly white students if they thought that they were part of nature. And there's this sort of Western idea that we are separate from nature and that nature does best when we're not involved. Whereas a lot of indigenous beliefs is that we are part of nature and it's important for us to be in collaboration with nature for its natural cycles. And once that relationship has been disrupted or removed, oftentimes by colonialism and now later capitalism, there is huge consequences. Like here out in the West, when the indigenous wisdom of keeping fire cycles was essentially brutally suppressed by white colonialism, now we're seeing these catastrophic wildfires because the natural tending of the land was removed. And now the forests have overgrown, they have become unhealthy. And whenever there's a fire that rolls through, it's like catastrophic. And so we're kind of having to do this now with pollinators, because there has been so many things now in just environment, our changing environment, that is so hostile to so many bee species that in some ways we have to be the stewards to come in. And I feel like in some ways that like we are the bees tenders, and the bees then that beautiful reciprocal relationship is a powerful and affirming connection that you don't have to be like woo-woo spiritual or any kind of religious flavor in order to feel that connection. Like that is open for anybody who sees these bees and is like, I don't want them to be extinct. I want them to continue to be on the planet. And through that understanding, I feel like that there's this beautiful connection that it gives us.
Yeah.
It definitely reminds me of like the fifth sacred thing, the novel by Starhawk, and just like the ongoing slogan, the earth is our mother, and bees, not to spoil anything. Yeah. Definitely recommend you read or listen to that one. But bees play a big part in sort of symbolizing our connection. And I think there's such, I mean, bees and other pollinators, but bees especially are such a bellwether, an indicator of so much about how the earth is doing and how the green world is doing. So around me, one of the reasons that I'm always so joyful when I see them is because we have a ton of really intensive agriculture, a lot of tobacco, a lot of cotton, a lot of peanuts. People often just seem like they just spray whatever they want to spray. And holding a little corner of this earth where I know that they're safe is, yeah, it's really, it feels like very important work.
And it is. There was actually studies that they've done. There's one in Princeton where we as humans tried to duplicate what bees do, where with Q-tips, they went and pollinated every single flower. And then they found that they were not as effective as insects were, as the actual bees that are doing the work are. And I say insects because a lot of times people, they don't like flies, they don't like wasps, they don't like hornets, they don't like slugs. Well, those are all pollinators. They all transfer pollen from one flower to another. And as much as I don't like wasps either, I have sacrificial plants and flowers that if the wasps stay there, and I stay here, then we'll all be okay. And I do that with a lot of my different plants and things is, if you stay over here, I'll stay over here. We'll all get along. And I haven't had any issues with that. And the same thing, ants. Ants are actually fairly good pollinators too. I'll put out sugar water for them so then they don't come into the house. And if we can start working with our pollinators and giving them things where we don't have to try and spray them, that is very helpful. And same thing with just because it's an insect doesn't mean it's bad. And I do have to continue to remember that, because the parasitic wasps are actually a pest of mason bees. So I protect my mason bees by putting the tubes in a mesh bag and closing them up, so that way the parasitic wasps can do what they are supposed to do and put their eggs in, I think, fly eggs in around horse manure. So then it controls like the horse flies and those kinds of things. So everything does have a purpose, and sometimes that purpose is to be eaten also. So sometimes it's like it's okay to have maggots, because then the maggots go to the chickens, and then the chickens have their grubs to eat. And the same thing, if we continue to talk about that, of the insects and the pollinators, we're also talking about birds too, because birds, as fledglings, they need to have, I think, it was some crazy amount, so I don't want to say a number because I know it's going to be wrong, but it is more than 100 grubs a day for them to go from fledgling to an adult bird. And if we're killing all these insects with these pest control and all these sprays and everything, well, then there's no grubs for the birds to eat. So then there's the decline of the birds. So it's this whole trail of the ecosystem. And when we spray for these little tiny bugs that we don't like, it's going all the way up. And then that's also with they found warfarin, which is Coumadin, which is a blood thinner, which is used in humans as a blood thinner. And it was discovered because it was a rat poison, and the rats basically just bled out. Well, they found Coumadin in raptors, the hawks. And basically what happened was, the hawks are going around and eating either the rats themselves or something else that ate the rat, and they're still finding Coumadin up the food chain. So we really got to be careful with what we're poisoning and who we're poisoning, because it just keeps going up the chain.
So, Carol, I do have a question for those of us who don't want to be poisoning the earth, and especially the hawks and the pollinators, but we have, our sweet potatoes are constantly getting chomped on. What do you think about like neem oil or other types of organic
Neem
pesticides? Do those
oil.
also have negative consequences for pollinators?
Neem oil is actually the only thing that I use. When it comes to other, I use IPM, Integrated Pest Management, and it depends on what is happening to your produce. If it's getting chomped on by slugs, there's beer traps. Honestly, like I said, I sacrifice some. So it depends on how bad of a slug infestation there is, but I would go around and be like, okay, these 10 I can sacrifice. But then the rest of my sweet potatoes are fine. But I also have 50-foot beds, so I have a lot more space where I can sacrifice. So if you're somebody who's not able to, then I would suggest like a beer trap. If you're able to have ducks, I would get ducks because ducks love slugs. There's also other types of things for the slugs. I'm not really positive on other solutions for that, but then, so for my apples, instead of doing any kind of spray, I actually received from one of my master gardener friends these mesh bags to go over the entire branch of apples. So if I start getting bugs or anything going on my apples, I'm going to start covering my apples. In Japan, they actually use individual nets on each apple. So someone goes around and wraps each apple. And it's a little more labor intensive, but that's something that I'm doing and will continue to do rather than do any kind of spray.
I wanted to mention real quick that IPM is very useful. I'll make sure to put something in the show notes, but it's basically like this systematic investigation. Okay, what's going on with my plant? And then you identify symptoms, and then using that information for the symptoms, you can then determine the cause. Once you look at the plant symptoms, and then you look for any evidence of what could be causing the plant symptoms. And it's kind of like almost like when you're identifying a plant species, you look at all these different diagnostic features. Like if the holes in your sweet potato plant, they look like they're really jagged, it's something eating it that might have shredding mouth parts. Or if you look on the surface of your sweet potatoes and there's a white powdery, just like a white powder on the leaves, then you kind of like go through, well, this is looking closer. You can see the beginnings of what is powdery mildew. And so from there, once you have identified what is causing the problem in your plants, you can make the determination as to whether or not, one, if it's bad enough for you to even do anything, two, what are the sort of steps, including just mechanical removal. Like I have that sacred fig tree that has been unfortunately colonized by scale insects. And what I've determined the best way to do is just mechanically removing the scale insects anytime I see them, because I don't want to use a pesticide on them. Because in Master Gardener, there's a lot of resources and information for the public to provide them with alternative methods of gardening that don't just go straight to pesticides. One of the things that sort of began the modern environmental movement was a book that was published in the 1960s by Rachel Carson called Silent Spring. And Silent Spring was similar to what you were talking about with this environmental magnification of certain types of pesticides and chemicals and pesticides that were causing unintended effects to populations of carnivorous birds are like eagles. And the DDT that was basically being magnified up the food chain was making the eggs of these American eagle, the symbol of the United States. It was making the eggshell so soft that when the mama birds would sit on their eggs, the eggs would break. And so the eagle populations were completely crashing. And reading Silent Spring, it's a pretty emotional book. It's not like a hard scientific look at what's happening. It's more like a, if we don't do anything, our entire environment is going to collapse. And that was one of the books that started the environmental movement. So yeah, it's just this understanding that the things we do that may not seem like it's going to have some long-term effect can literally be catastrophic for the environment. So in Master Gardener, there's a huge intention around not using pesticides as much as possible. And in fact, the only times that we actually recommend people, well, not even recommend, but the only times that people are more encouraged to use pesticides is in industrial environments. Whenever it comes to like home gardening, we're always going to try to encourage you to find different ways of either just like removing the pests or finding ways with my apples. One of the things, and I learned this through Master Gardener, is I need to remove all the apples when they fall to the ground, because otherwise there's so many different things that happen with apples when you just leave all of the fruit on the ground that creates a lot of like apple scab, which is a type of fungus. So the fungus overwinters in the fallen apples, and then the next spring the fungus gets put into the new apples. And so simple things like removing the apples at the end of the season off of the ground that have fallen, these are things that can prevent the apples from having all of these diseases that I don't even need to spray about. So, yeah, there's a lot of intention behind ensuring that people are given as many resources and information as possible before they go straight to just like spraying things.
Yeah.
Yeah, while we're talking about it, what do you advise listeners do to encourage native pollinators? I know we talked a little bit about some of the things, but like, what are some of the other ways that folks who are wanting to establish both a spiritual and scientific connection with their native pollinators can do in order to help bees?
So native pollinators usually love native plants. So wherever you are, if you're looking to encourage your own native pollinators, you need to find out what your native plants are. So here in the Mid-Willamette Valley, I'm planting a lot of, for me and the mason bees, it's the early pollinators. So I try and go for the early blooming plants. So I've got actually some forsythia in pots right now that I'm waiting to plant in the fall, so that way it gets the fall rain and overwinters and it can explode in the spring. I also have a lot of like ocean spray, and I'm trying to get some goldenrod. So for native pollinators, your natives are going to be there year round because they're native to your area. They've They've lived their entire species' life, right? So they're going to be used to your whatever your wintertime is. They're going to be used to whatever your springtime is or whatever your summertime is, even if it's a little hotter than usual or a little colder than usual. So you also want to make sure you get year-round blooms. In our area, that's the goldenrod. Goldenrod is more of a fall plant. And then the asters. Asters can bloom well into November. So you want to make sure you cover the entire year with blooms, because pollinators obviously need something to pollinate. And not only are they pollinating, that's also their food as well. And not only do you want the variety of the year-round blooms, you want day blooms and you want night blooms. I have a bout house that I'm trying to figure out which tree to put it up in. And then I want to get six more, because that's only one bout house isn't enough. And because I want to encourage the nighttime pollinators as well. And bats, depending on the bat, I don't know which one, but there are some species that are endangered. If you check out Xerces Society, that's Z or Xerces, Xerces Society, they have a whole list of different native pollinators for each region, and it is a nationwide company. And I actually applied for a Xerces Society grant, and I won two kits of 40 plants each. So I'm receiving 80 plants of native species to my area. So I'm actually getting more ocean spray, and I'm getting more milkweed and all those other things for my pollinators. So I'm very excited about that. And again, you want to have your variety. So as much as we like to have just irises or just dahlias, those are beautiful flowers, you want to make sure you also have your camas, you also have your milkweed, you also have tulips. Tulips aren't very good with nectar, but they have really good pollen. So you want to make sure you have a little bit of everything, because if you are too heavy on one thing, then you're not going to have the other. And depending on what pollinator you're looking for, it's the same thing. You're going to end up with one type of pollinator and not the other. And a lot of people love lavender, and so do I. And lavender is a very good pollinator plant. However, if you actually look at the research, most of the bees that visit the lavender are honeybees. Now, bumblebees will visit it too, and there are other bees. I'm not saying that only honeybees will visit it, but the majority of bees that do are honeybees. So if you're looking for something like mason bees and you only have lavender, it's probably not going to work. And it's also because lavender blooms a little bit later than when the mason bees are out. So you really, to have native pollinators, you just want to have a variety across the board of different native plants and of your region. Make sure that you have it of your region. I'm a huge advocate of if you build it, they will come. So you get some native plants. You make sure there's water, because any pollinator needs to have water. However, with those pollinators, you want to make sure there's some kind of marble or something in there. I have little marble rocks in like a ramekin and fill that with water. So then the bees or butterflies can land on those little rocks and drink their water and not drown. I don't know if anybody has a pool out there, but if you do, make sure you have a pool cover, because you'll have insects that will die. They'll drown from trying to drink water in those. And then depending on what kind of pollinator you have. So again, mason bees, they use dirt and mud to block up their tubes. So if you want mason bees, you're going to need to have some kind of mud mixture kind of nearby. But here in Oregon, you just dig a hole and that's all the mud they need. Other places with the different types of soil around, you might need to actually buy a clayey mud mix, which they do sell at different mason bee selling locations.
Nice. And I think we've also in a previous conversation talked about how to support pollinators in in how you deal with your winter weeds or overwintering and how important it is to keep pollinators in mind even outside of the planting cycle. Could you speak to that a bit more?
Yes, so the best thing you can do for your pollinators in the winter is be a lazy gardener. And what I mean by that is don't pick up your leaves. So as much as everybody wants to rake up their leaves and take care of them and get them off the property, Well, what you're doing is you're raking up the leaves. I believe there's butterflies that will have egg sacs in the leaves. These any kind of straw, any kind of tall straw-like structures, you're going to have your mason bees in those. If you have dead wood and people want to get rid of that dead wood and just remove it off the property, make sure you look it over first, because last time we were doing a burn pile and we were burning, there was a branch and there were three praying mantis egg sacs on there. So I set that branch to the side and we burned everything else, because those three egg sacs hold over 200 praying mantises. And that would have been 3 times 200, that had been 600 praying mantises I would have just burned up had I not been paying attention. So I really like the lazy gardening aspect. So in the wintertime, people will probably come over and think my garden's a mess, but in all reality, my garden is thriving with all sorts of life that you just can't see yet because it's wintertime. And I'm going to keep it that way. And for those that aren't sure about how that looks, again, there's Xerces Society, OSU, Oregon State University Extension site. There are bee steward. There's a bee steward class and something else, I don't remember, but you complete that course and you get a sign that says bee pollinator garden or something like that. So you can post that sign up and you can let people know that this is intentional, that I'm not picking up these leaves because X, Y, and Z are living here, and I'm not going to kill them just because you want my grass clean.
Saying hopefully that gets out to like neighborhood associations and stuff too, because I'm constantly hearing just horror stories about them enforcing monoculture, quote unquote, clean grass lawns, and just makes me very glad to live out in the country.
Plus, I can be like, no, I am not lazy. This is for the bees. This is like, this is just say it's all for the bees. And then it doesn't seem like I'm neglecting my garden. It's all intentional neglect. Yeah. And so just wrapping up here, Carol, do you have anything you would like to let our listeners know about in terms of different projects you're working on or anything you want to promote?
Yes, so Marion County Master Gardeners Association is doing our second time, so second year, pollinator symposium. That is on October 19th. It will be at the Scottish Rite Center. There will be a fee to come in. This is a fundraiser event for our master gardeners, and we're looking at $35 a ticket, and it is a whole entire day of education. We already have two keynote speakers and a main speaker. We're looking at Angel and myself as doing breakout sessions, and this is all about pollinators. So I will probably be speaking about mason bees myself, and this is going to be a vendor show. So we will actually be having vendors there that will, of course, be pollinator-friendly vendors, and it is going to be a day full of education and camaraderie with other master gardeners, and if not master gardeners, other garden enthusiasts. And I highly recommend it. Last year we had over 300 people attend, and it actually helped raise, I think, $200 for our garden association. And that was just with our raffle and silent auction. So we are looking to up this as a fundraising event, which is why we are charging for tickets this year. Not only that, but Master Gardeners are, again, they're at Marion County Fair, the Oregon State Fair. We are also at different events throughout the county. So just keep your eye out on that. You can always check out Marion County Master Gardeners Association, our website, because we have a calendar with all the events and the free workshops that are coming up. Like I talked about earlier, the Iris Dig is this weekend. And again, those are free workshops. And just a plug for myself, my own business, pollinatorhavenfarm.com. You can check out what I'm doing. And I myself am at the Wednesday markets. If you want to come check out what different pollinator farm that I have myself and what I'm growing, you can check that out at the State and Farmers Market on Wednesdays. Other than that, just check out the Master Gardeners websites, and we're always doing something.
Yeah, and I wanted to say that we're going to be putting out some videos here on TikTok about the pollinator haven and helping inform folks. So even if you aren't local to us, there are still ways to learn about mason bees. And also, I'll make sure to put in the show notes, there's some really good online resources that Master Gardener has. Like, there's an entire series on how to grow tomatoes that I highly recommend of anybody who wants to get successful with tomatoes. And it's pretty universal, the knowledge that they talk about. So yeah, so even if you aren't listening and you're local to us, like you're, you know, somewhere else in the world, there's still a lot of really incredible resources for both Master Gardener and our, you know, the Pollinator Collective. So yeah. Well, Carol, thank you so much again for coming on the show and talking to us about pollinators and Master Gardener and all those wonderful things. It was really great to have you on, and hopefully this will inspire some folks to watch the bees, pay attention to the bees a little bit more and other native pollinators, and maybe find their own spiritual connection.
Absolutely.
And all the bees, not just the honeybees.
No, not I just think, the honeybees.
Carol, hadn't you mentioned at one point that mason bees pollinate at a rate like, you know, exponentially larger than honeybees? Oh, yeah. Or some others?
Yeah. So just as a comparison, it takes about 7 mason bees to do the work of over 500 honeybees. It's the way they do it. They belly flop from flower to flower and they just get pollen all over them. They're so fun to watch. If you get mason bees, just watch them in the flowers. It's they're just make a huge mess and then go to the next flower and make a huge mess. And honeybees are so tidy with how they collect that they don't pollinate the next flower. Oh, yes, it does. They do exponentially much better work, more effective work.
Yay, mason bees.
Yay, mason bees. Yay. So thank you again for coming on and talking about all of these wonderful pollinators that I hope folks out there will find their own spiritual connection with. And yeah, I'll make sure to put all this in the show notes so folks can connect with you and connect with maybe a Master Gardener chapter in their area. So yeah. Well, yeah,
thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks, Carol. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Carol for coming on the show to talk about bees. I know I'm going to be a lot more mindful when this upcoming spring our flowers start to bloom, and I'm going to be looking more out for the native pollinators.
Yay, native pollinators. If you would like to support the Science Witch podcast and you can contribute to us financially, you can do so by subscribing to our Patreon. At the $1 a month level, you'll get access to all sorts of bonus content, including the yoga classes that I have been teaching and filming and putting up there, which is the only place I put them because I don't want to be another cis-passing, able-bodied, white femme person teaching yoga on YouTube. So I just put them on Patreon as a just way to share them because I am doing them, but I also want to not center what has been largely the representation of yoga and also share my class. So that's only available for Patreon at the $1 a month level. And you get access to all sorts of other bonus class and bonus content, including our Who's in Bloom series, which I am trying to record as much as I can, despite the fact that the flowers are in bloom, not very long in time for me to get them out, but I am working on it.
Speaking of our Patreon, we wanted to announce a change in both our Deity Deep Dive series and Sticker Exchange that's available at our $5 a month level. With the intention of synergizing our talents, I'll be including original music into our next Deity Deep Dive, and in addition, we're going to be releasing the stickers out of that deity once every 3 months instead of every month. Keeping the sticker exchange to a quarterly schedule, it's going to allow Angel more time to work on producing art or arranging guest artists, as well as getting the stickers printed and mailed out to our Patreon supporters, and then available on Etsy. For this upcoming fall season deity, we will be exploring Athena, goddess of justice.
And then at the $10 a month level, our Science Witch podcast, Coven, you will get access to my tarot practice. And I haven't had much time to actually practice tarot in the last few months, which is one of the things I would like to get back to with our supporters at this level. So I'm going to be available to start booking tarot readings over Zoom for 30-minute sessions for our supporters at this level. And yeah, if you want to go ahead and reach out to me over Patreon, I will make sure to book a 30-minute Zoom reading. And even if you were a member of the Science Witch Coven and you had to leave for reasons, you know, financial reasons or whatever, you please just reach out. I really love reading tarot and I haven't had enough chance to do it lately in my life, so I want to bring that for the folks that are supporting us at this higher level as my offering to share what is something I really love. And I don't want to be egotistical, but I'm a really good tarot reader, and I feel that it is one of my gifts. And so if you join us at this level, you can arrange a 30-minute tarot reading with me. And if you've been a member for a while and you want to reach out, go ahead and send me a message over Patreon, or you can contact us via our social medias, which we will mention at the end of this.
Also, the second Trans Telethon is going to be coming up at the end of next month, and I've been cooking up music for that too, and I guess you'll just have to come by the Infinity Room in Salem, Oregon on August 31st to hear it. We also have drag shows and live comedy. It's also going to be streamed, if for some reason you can't make it out. If you'd like to hear us still, it'll be live streamed on our Twitch.
Also, I wanted to mention it's going to be a benefit for the Rainbow Railroad, which is one of the organizations that's helping trans and queer people oppressive environments to seek gender-affirming care. So the stream will be free to view, but we'll have donation tickets if you want to help support this really important cause.
Finally, if you'd like to find us on social media, you can look for us at Science Witch Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads, and at Science Witch Pod on the platform formerly known as Twitter. Show notes and transcripts are available on our website at sciencewitchpodcast.com. And if you just want to email us, you can do that at questions@sciencewitchpodcast.com.
Oh, one last thing I wanted to say. If you happen to listen to us on Spotify, please share us on Spotify, because we're looking to try to reach a threshold of followers on Spotify that will really greatly help our podcast. So, yeah, feel free if you are listening. Thank you, as always. And let's go ahead and sign off. Until next time.
Live long and prosper.
And blessed be.